Subcommittee at the moment in order that we might take testimony. And we're going to start off with Senate Bill, public hearing on Senate Bill 340. Senator Roger Byers, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Roger Byers, State Senator, District 9. Before you is Senate Bill 340. And this bill is actually very simple. It's quite thick. And I'm not sure why it came out so thick, but the bill simply, in today's law, before a person can be an administrator and at school district, they have to be licensed by the Teacher Standards and Practice Commission. And this bill simply removes that requirement. And I think what I would like to point out specifically is that it doesn't say they can't be. It just says that they don't have to be. And my reason for introducing this bill is not because of anything that the TSPC has done, but it's the fact that today's school districts are large, multi-million, almost in some cases billion-dollar industries. And as we've seen in the city of Portland and their struggle to actually find an administrator for that district, is I don't understand, and I don't think it's appropriate more that we limit the people who can apply for these jobs. I think our school districts need the ability to go out and find the best person they can to do the job, whether that person has an education background or not. And I think that is the whole key. It's if there are people out there, and let me use, for example, a retired CEO, someone who might be willing to come into a school district and say, I know how to run a corporation. I know how to manage people. I've done it all my life. And now, you know, I'm retired from what I've done, and I'd be willing to do something else for a while, or maybe even work at a lesser salary or something, but has some expertise to offer. I don't think our school boards should be prohibited from hiring a person like that if he or she is the best person for the job. I think that's the focus on this bill, is to allow the school boards more flexibility that they can go out and recruit and find the best possible person for the job as administrators and let them do that job. That's what the bill does. It's really fairly simple, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'd be happy to answer any questions about it. With that, I will let some other people. I'm sure there's a lot of other people behind me who want to come in here and tell you what a bad idea it is. So,
questions?
Yeah.
Yes, Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Senator Byer. This raises an interesting point about my own school district, Springfield School District 19, who just hired a new superintendent, and the person who applied for that job, who is still with the district, I don't believe has classroom experience, and I'll be interested in hearing from the school people, Chuck Bennett perhaps, or whomever will be here to testify. That's a good point you raise, and as a teacher, I always felt there should be separate tracks for teaching and administrating. My experience is I never wanted to be an administrator. I chose not to be. I know that they've taken good teachers and made lousy administrators out of them because they're two different things. And I think if you're looking at an administrator, you should be looking at someone who can run a school efficiently. And I know in some cases, and years ago, the only requirement to be an administrator is that you were a coach at one point, and that's changed a lot. But I don't disagree with your premise, and I guess I will wait to hear other testimony to see what leeway there already is. And I know there was an article in the Oregonian about, I think it was a small rural Washington school who hired the bus driver to run the school, and I think he even lived on the Oregon side of the river, but the people loved him. He did a good job, a better job than the people who were qualified to do it, and he did it for the rest of that year, and they wanted to keep him, but he wasn't qualified. But I know there's a different set of skills than to run a school district than there is to be a teacher, and to have, just because you have educational background, that doesn't mean that you are going to do the best job as an administrator. So I support the idea of different educational tracks. I don't think they have to be mutually exclusive, though.
No, Mr. Chair.
Because you could be most excellent administrators have had classroom experience. They've moved through that track. But so I'll be interested in hearing the rest of the testimony. Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Morissette, and I'd like to emphasize that point. This bill does not exclude anyone from the job, and I think that's the issue. Another perfect example is the Portland Public School District right now. They've been looking for years for a superintendent, and they have Mr. Scherzinger, who used to be head of our revenue department here, was an interim superintendent. He's now their superintendent. They had to get an exemption from this law because he was not a licensed administrator.
Well, that's a good example.
If this bill wasn't being in effect, or this law was in effect, he wouldn't have had to get an exemption. He could have been hired as their administrator. So, with that, Mr. Chair, I'll go back to Rules Committee if there's no other questions.
No other questions? Thank you very much,
thank you.
Senator Breyer. Velma Hartwig signed up here. She's traveled. No, she has no. Come on up. And Ed Johnston, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Velma Hartwig. Mr. Chair, if it would be all right with you, since these bills are related, I would ask that I could speak to all three of them instead of coming up for each one. Would that be okay?
In terms of opening the public hearing, closing it open.
Or if you prefer not, I won't.
I prefer not.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right.
We're open for hearing on one bill only.
Oh, okay. All righty. Well, I agree with Senator Beyer. That's basically what I said in my written testimony. There are many, many people who are qualified to run a school district. And in order to do the nuts and bolts work, you don't have to be a teacher. You don't have to have been in a classroom. You have to know how to run a business because it is a business. You're hiring and firing. You're supervising people. You're handling the money. You're handling the transportation. You're handling so many things. And it would be so much better to have, like he said, a retired CEO from a company. I'm not sure if it referred to it in this bill, but I believe there were a lot of references in these three bills to people who had a license other than that of a school administrator. And not every profession has licenses, so this is something you might want to take a look at and see if that is exclusive to people who have licenses in some other field.
Yes, this bill does not refer to licenses.
That one does not. Okay.
So, thank you very much. Yes, please.
My name is Edward Johnston from Lincoln County, and I definitely support this bill. Could probably say that this is part of the reason why this is directly one of the reasons why Lincoln County voted out their school board is in reference to this and finances. Retired CEO in that manner could definitely do the job just as well or better, but us too, we could lower the financial cost of the school district, and that's a plus for the school district, and the school board eases pressure off of that. So dealing with Lincoln County, who did recall their school board, dealing with part of this reference, I feel bluntly that I have the right to speak on Lincoln County's behalf that endorses this bill, because I'm the one who started the recall and made sure the recall did happen in Lincoln County because of their finances, and we endorse this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you.
All the witness.
Sorry.
Thank you very much. All righty. Teresa?
Ferrer. Mr. Chair, I'm speaking specifically to 369 and 370, but that's what my testimony is written for, but I could comment on 340 if you like.
Okay,
I
well...
I that they'd all be together. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, why don't we defer until...
That would be fine.
Until we have the other bills up. Thank you. Pat Evenson. Bill Beck. Chuck Bennett. Pat,
Evenson Brady.
Brady, Evenson Brady, you're first on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Pat Evenson Brady. I'm currently the chair of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. In my professional life, I'm the superintendent of Region 9 Education Service District, which serves Wasco and Hood River counties. Teacher Standards and Practices Commission has not taken a position with regard to Senate Bill 340, but I would provide two bits of information for you. Through rule, persons who do not qualify otherwise for administrator licenses can be licensed in an alternative manner, so that already we have in place the rule and requirement, and in fact we have some superintendents who have been licensed under the exceptional administrator rule. One of the concerns that I would express in removing administrators from the requirement for licensure is that we then lose the ability of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission to sanction any misbehavior. In other words, at this point, the deterrent of knowing that if you do something inappropriate in your professional role, that it will come before Teacher Standards and Practices Commission and that your licensure may be imperiled, appears to me to be a good part of the rules in Oregon. So again, two things. Currently, we could license administrators who would not otherwise qualify, and secondly, I believe it's important to maintain the discipline function of Teacher Standards and Practices, particularly for Oregon school administrators.
May I?
Yes.
Thank you for your testimony. Have you ever had an occasion where you were not able to reprimand an administrator who had a special exceptional administration license but was not a member of the standard of practices? I mean, has that happened?
No, because at this point, again, someone who had an exceptional license falls under the same rules as someone who would have any of the other licenses.
Further question. What manner of exceptions would you be looking at for a person that's filing for an exceptional license?
I don't have the details with me, Senator Starr, but I would be happy to provide those for the committee's further work. Basically, we're looking for people who have the recommendation of their school district for employment in these positions.
Thank you. I'd appreciate to have that. Senator Morissette.
Thank you. That's interesting because I wish I could remember where in the state of Washington this event happened, and the superintendent happened to live, I think, in Oregon, the person who was acting superintendent. But he was, he didn't have the educational background to be the superintendent. It was a small district, but people loved him. He solved their problem. They wanted to keep that person. Now, let's say that happened in Oregon, and it was the bus driver who may or may not have even finished high school. He took over. He ran the district. The district said, we want to keep you as our superintendent today. Could he be approved under this exceptional administrative license, or do you have other criteria?
I don't have those at my fingertips, and so I would be happy to provide accurate details for you on the exceptional administrator license.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. We're opposed to Senate Bill 370. We have a number of reasons. Pat has mentioned some of them already. I would like to just follow up on your first question here regarding the administrative rule. The administrative rule in question is OAR 584-080-0160, the exceptional administrator license. And in terms of the question of whether the bus driver could take over as superintendent, at least our reading at this point would be possibly not. It allows an individual with a master's degree and extraordinary professional experience that that extraordinary professional experience compensates for the lack of experience in elementary or secondary schools. And that tends to be the test. But the master's degree might be a threshold that could or could not limit that person's ability. Senator Morissette also asked about Steve Barrett in Springfield. And Steve is the assistant superintendent at Springfield Public Schools, and he has not had classroom teaching experience. He has been the assistant superintendent for communications operations, personnel, food service, transportation, and budget. So he's had a pretty wide breadth of experience in the Springfield public school system, and was the second runner-up to be the superintendent of schools, and ultimately did not reach that post. There are a couple of things that we want to point out to you in the bill that at least our reading of the bill right now makes us wonder if there is a criminal background check contained in the bill relative to anyone who would be available to take an administrative job. We're confident in TSPC's ability to do that that check, and that occurs. The other, I think, a really fundamental reason there are a lot of reasons, but a fundamental reason, when you think of small school districts around the state, the current system has provided school districts, all sizes, but particularly districts that don't hire professional consultants and others to do kind of a headhunter search for them, a qualified pool of applicants for these very important jobs. A guarantee at least someone has taken a look at their background, their credentials, and determined that that persons that they will be talking to who are licensed by TSPC are qualified to hold those jobs. And in talking with Ozzie Rose about this, he wanted me to be sure to underscore this, that he's been in the business with the Superintendents Association for any number of years now, and Ozzie felt real strongly that this was one of the real services that is provided by TSPC, just as a service to school districts. We also are fairly convinced that with just the limitation under the exceptional administrator's license requiring a certain level of education, that the master's degree, it does open this job up fairly broadly, and that we do have it available. Certainly the superintendent of Portland Public Schools, the largest district in our state, serves as an example of someone from outside of education serving in one of the most important, if not the most important, education leadership position in our state, and not having the full credentials that would be required under the basic TSPC requirement. It just feels like, Mr. Chairman, this is a solution that just has not identified its problem yet. We deal with a lot of school districts. We represent administrators, and I think any comments we would make would be seen through that prism. We do not get calls saying we've got this qualified person that we can't seem to get into the position of administrator. And I think we would hear about it, knowing how, and I think that we would hear from the School Boards Association that there is a problem out there of otherwise qualified people, otherwise highly desired community members who are seeking these positions being unable to take the job. And if we'd heard about it, I'd share it with you. We just haven't heard about it. Perhaps at some future date, as the employment picture changes in the state of Oregon, we'll hear a lot more about it. But at this point, interesting idea, but just unnecessary at this point. Thanks, sir.
Question? I have one question, and that is, as the configuration of schools changes, would this likely be a larger problem? And I'm referring now to charters and electronic schools, storefront schools with
It's something I think, Mr. Chairman, that we should certainly keep track of. And I think particularly when you look at electronic schools, storefront schools, we do have electronic schools in the state now, and Salem-Keizer has one of the prime examples served by a qualified, under the current system, a qualified school administrator who's doing just a bang-up job. And this is an outstanding system, but otherwise would be eligible to serve as a principal in any school district. But I think you're asking a question that we should keep track of, particularly as it relates if we do see a growth in charter schools and a need to meet the needs of charter schools. It's something we should be back here talking with you about as you or members identify a need. I think the only problem now is trying to identify the need.
Any further questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, I'm Bill Beck and also represent COSA. I'm the Director of Professional Development, but I've spent 32 years with the Portland School District and want to share a couple of comments in addition to what Chuck's already provided. When I was a director of instruction for Portland Schools, I served under Diana Snowden during my last few years with the district. She came out of the business community, and she acquired the exceptional administrative license through TSPC in order to serve as our superintendent. Point being, if we can do, under current rule, for Portland Public Schools, we can do the same thing in any district in the state of Oregon. And boards of education currently have all the flexibility they need under current rule to make that happen, whether it's a storefront school or whatever. If they choose to go outside of the educational arena, then as long as a person has a master's degree, they have lots of options. Also, there was an earlier comment made about a lot of folks have the ability to manage a school. And I've spent 17 years as a principal in a lot of different schools throughout the Portland School District. And when I began as the principal in 1973, most of what I did was manage the school and manage teachers. By the time I finished in 17 years later, I had to be a well-honed instructional leader. I really had to know a lot about curriculum in order to provide adequate leadership in a school. And that, we still have the ability to go outside for principals as well with the exceptional administrative license. But believe you me, in order for a school to really do the job, they have to have leadership on that faculty or for that faculty that falls in line with the history of our schools. Principal was the principal teacher of a school. That's how it started. And then later it just became principal. But they do have to have a lot of background in education to do an adequate job in today's schools.
Questions? Senator Morris.
Thank you. I'll see if I can find a question in this. But I guess my experience as a classroom teacher for almost 30 years, and I work for some excellent, excellent principals and some excellent, excellent superintendents, and I think you absolutely have to have a grasp of curriculum because that's what it's all about. That's what most of it is about. But the qualities are often, they're beyond the scope sometimes of the classroom requirements. And I just think that I'd like to see different tracks for administrators who, you know, persons interested in administration, they go into administration. And I've seen very good teachers rewarded by making them administrators, and they were dismal administrators. And so I think there are different skills required, and there needs to be the flexibility to hire. And I'm satisfied with your explanation because I think that does. Let's see, a question. Do you think that there needs to be the guidelines to the educational requirements of a master's degree? Is that the basis then for the educational requirement?
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
Excuse me. Before you run away, I want to follow up on that question. Where do I find in the research and literature that a master's degree gives any kind of certainty about ability to manage or to lead in that arena?
That's a good question.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I didn't come prepared with that research to share with you today.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're asking a very good question. I don't think it's a guarantee. It's a threshold that at least guarantees a level of education that then puts you into a threshold to deal with the management-related issues as they have evolve either in your experience or in your education. I recall listening to Pat talk about her own education as a superintendent and was surprised to hear for her licensing, if I recall correctly, I'll speak for you and you can correct me quickly, but that it involved her training in this went into the supervisory and management areas rather than into the kind of educational areas.
Yeah. I was speaking about the TSPC budget, and someone asked about superintendent preparation, and I reflected that in my own preparation as a superintendent, there was only one course about teaching. All of the rest of the preparation was around personnel, law, negotiations, writing policy, developing budget, managing facilities. So I don't know how characteristic that is of all programs, and that was some years ago. But it was clearly a preparation for a different kind of management than even the principal's training was. It was training really to be a superintendent.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Senator Ferriola.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do have a couple questions. I'm pretty sensitive to the concept that there needs to be a relatively rigorous path, a career path, for superintendents and for others that seek the management role in those schools. But outside the profession, I think that is looked at as a barrier. And I think you must have heard these conversations, had these conversations, and heard these criticisms from various places. How does the education institution reward entrepreneurism and get innovation within its system in what appears to be a closed loop?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would first suggest to you that I'll give you an example. I guess the one that Senator Morsett brought up, which is the selection of I'm not familiar. I think you'll find that generally these jobs are competitively recruited. It is done nationally. It is done looking for people with skill sets that vary from district to district. Portland, again, I think is just a prime example in the past several years, moving between outstanding national educators, extremely well-known financial people inside the state, business people inside the state, that as skill sets are needed, there seems to be a pool available and a latitude available that allows for rewarding any kind of skill set by the district and identified by the local community or the school board is what they're after. So I think it is fairly highly competitive in that way.
Mr. Chairman,
and does allow for the opportunities like you're describing.
Follow up.
I
think the perception is that there's a certain corporate culture, and I don't doubt for a second that there is absolute hot contest for these jobs. These are great jobs. Have you seen some of these pay scales on these jobs?
Yes, sir, I have.
They're good. But I'm just wondering if people outside the system don't think that because there is a certain corporate culture and a perceived barrier to entry into this thing, that this actually encourages people to look outside of the system for educational opportunities. So I'm talking about displacement to private schools and displacement to alternative schools and even homeschooling, because they see a corporate culture that doesn't seem to feature entrepreneurism and innovation. And I guess the example I'd use is this. Before the advent of what we call dot-com millionaires, there are thousandaires now, but you see me, you couldn't have found anyone who would look
passed the Harvard MBA to run businesses. I mean, the Harvard MBA was the gold standard for business people. But those were not the places where billions of new fortunes were made. It was people that had no basic business training but had innovation and entrepreneurship at the heart of what they were doing. And so the, quote, priesthood of business, which was the MBA from all of our business schools, got left in the dust in terms of the new revolution in business technologies. And it was all essentially a skunk works run by people that were reinventing the phrases of and the lexicon and the language of business. I think that's what people want to see in education. And so I'm wondering if this isn't a mechanism to try and shake up the educational institution.
There are, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, I think that's an interesting question. There's other mechanisms. I think changing the PERS system will shake up the culture as well.
And Matt, Mr. Chairman, I think
it's
a one-way street.
Yeah. I mean, you can shake it up all you want. What you're going to ultimately end up with, though, I think, is people with expertise. Ultimately, you're going to have some sort of expertise in pedagogy to just deal with the question of education of children, which it has its own... I'm sure. I mean, I come from outside that as well, and it has its own mystery to me as to how do you teach a child to read and speak and cipher and all the rest of it. But I think that I would ask you to look around the state again and to take a look at the differences among the school districts, ESDs, and from building to building. I think the entrepreneurship and creativity, the excitement of even a kind of a dot-com culture does exist out there. We do see incredible ideas taking shape to the point that you'll hear about them, I'm sure, at various times that, you know, is my local ESD competing with me for either construction or telecommunications opportunity will be some businessman's question, I'm sure, along the way. I at least see bills that seem to indicate that the entrepreneurship may well be as exciting in public education as most communities want to bear right now. There is a lot of that going on. Salem has tried e-schools. We have alternative schools to meet needs of groups of children, and perhaps most excitingly about education is this goes right down to the individual child's educational needs, and that is entirely different than the education system I grew up in, and that requires some real different ways of looking at things. So I think you're asking all the right questions, and I think when you look at our school system, the answers are in place.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
You.
Appreciate your testimony. Mardell Dunsworth.
Excuse me, my voice is not quite with me today. I'm Mardell Dunsworth with Oregon Department of Education. Mr. Chair, Senators, ODE supports the testimony of Pat, Chuck, and Bill. We're concerned that administrators may be hired without school administration background, the coursework or the practicums that Pat mentioned, excuse me, that strengthen their skill in an administrative position, and this may weaken an established statewide licensure system, which currently ensures that minimum competencies have been met by those principals and superintendents. As they mentioned as well, Oregon has a recognized licensure system, and it allows for the common standards across school districts regarding those specific educational requirements of the principals and superintendents. We are concerned, as Chuck mentioned, that this may eliminate the requirement for the criminal background checks. The bill requires that administrators participate in a mentoring program. And we're concerned that there are not mentoring programs, especially for administrators, in place in all districts across the state. And it's difficult for the department to support this bill when the No Child Left Behind Act is really raising expectations for teacher and administrator quality. And this year, for the first time, we have some funding available to support administrator quality and improvement. That's it. Do you have any questions?
Yes. All of the witnesses have have referred to the standards that are set by TSPC as far as licensure is required. Again, I raise the same question. How do we find information that verifies that the input, the education level, has anything to do with the performance and outcome for children in our public school system?
I believe that in ODE rule you have the standards established, and as well as the coursework that's established at the higher ed institutions that do ensure that administrators and principals are prepared adequately. Is there a direct tie between adequate preparation and high quality performance? Probably not, probably not directly. But at least a minimum level of education is going to ensure that we have people in the school buildings that are well prepared.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have concluded the testimony on Senate Bill 340, and we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 340, open a public hearing, a work session on Senate Bill 11.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd like to move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 11.
Senator Perry always moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 11. Questions of the committee? Any objection?
Do I like this bill? I'm trying to quickly read it and make sure I like it.
Mr. Chairman, in deference to my chairman for the Revenue Committee, who was busily engaged in an important hearing moments ago, this bill allows to stand mechanism for mutual consolidation of school districts as opposed to what I'd call a hostile takeover of school districts.
Thank
that
you.
That jogs your memory, sir.
That does. Thank you very much.
Any objection to the moving the amendments? Not so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move Senate Bill 11 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Perioli has moved Senate Bill 11 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Perioli?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, Senate Bill 11 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 369.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to volunteer to carry Senate Bill 11.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And Senator Perioli will carry Senate Bill 11. Those are very much alike. Okay.
And you can tap in and out if that looks good. Just when you take care of it.
We have several people that have traveled a distance to be here. I'm going to put them first on to testify since we're getting later in the day. Velma Hartwick and Ed Johnston. And Pat Stevenson Brady. We didn't, Holly. Yes, yes, please. Go ahead, Ms. Hartwick.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Chairman and members. On this 369, I have a question that you might want to consider,
And that is, how would the 10% FTEs affect small school districts and small schools? For instance, in our new charter school, we will have a licensed mechanic who has volunteered, and I don't know if that counts as an FTE. We have an art major who has volunteered to teach a class. We also have a master teacher who is retired and has volunteered to teach without pay. And he has let his license slide because he's not teaching anymore. So this is something that I'm sure could be changed somehow for smaller schools, because if we have to have 10% FTE, we'll probably only have about 15 teachers there. And it would be rather difficult at times if we don't have somebody who has the proper credentials to teach and meet the credits. And I'm sure that there are small school districts which would have the same problem. So it might be something to think about. Maybe you want to tweak it a little bit so it would resolve that problem and go ahead and keep the 10%. I think it's a good idea. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Questions? We've tapped into a hearing on Senate Bill 369, and Senate Bill 369 does have 10% in it. I'm going to, since you did sign up for Senate Bill 370.
Yes.
We're going to tap out of Senate Bill 369, allow you to testify on Senate Bill 370.
Okay. That the only question I would have on that is, again, the professional license. Because not everybody who is qualified to teach, as the example I gave of the art major, does teach classes in the community, and she's very good, but she has no license. And there are other professions that do not require a license that could probably teach classes in school. And I don't know how this would be changed, how the words would be changed to include those who are qualified by experience, let's say, to be able to teach without a professional license. And that was the only question I had.
Thank you. You're talking about a charter school.
Well, yes, in our community it is a charter school, but in other communities there are small schools.
Right.
In other districts there are small districts. That was the thing that concerned me.
Within the charter school law there's provision for non-licensed
individuals
to teach. That's not a problem for your charter.
No, but I was concerned about other small schools.
Thank you very much. Any further questions? Mr. Johnston.
My name is Edward Johnston of Lincoln County. I think 370 needs to go pass in references that we don't always need to have teacher standards and practice controlling everything on that point, because we have a lot of students right now that can't even read and write. So we need a variety of teachers that will take the initiative that would help students that need to be taught how to read and write. We got more students coming out now in today's schools that can't read and write than we do 30 years ago. And I could testify to that, especially in Lincoln County. And kids don't even know what a Constitution, Declaration, or Independence are. We're not even taught that. They don't get it. So, and then we need to open up so that way there's more horizons in our schools than having a set project outline that's going to dictate on how our schools are taught. I believe it needs to be left to the communities and our school boards and for them to work hand in hand and take some of the leadership and put it back into the community's hands. That's my point.
Thank you. I will allow you now to testify on Senate Bill 369 as we'll tap out of 370 and
look at 369.
We're getting flexible there.
Oh, I'm getting real flexible here.
I know. These
people,
it's wonderful.
A long way from home here.
Right. Yeah, but anyway, on 369, I'm going to refer back to Senate Bill 370. That's my same opinion. Now, we have a lot of students that can't read and write. I mean, yes, the kids with Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, they don't even have a clue. And believe me, I've been on a local school committee. I've been very involved in my school district. And it's really frustrating when you listen to standard practices or all this stuff, how it's supposed to work, and then it doesn't work the way it should. When you do make complaints, you know, sometimes it's just overheard. So, I mean, or nothing's really followed up on it. So we need to get some teachers in there that have different horizons, let them be able to express themselves in teaching, because the only way we're going to get future even senators is by letting the teachers express, to let them let the kids open up their own horizons. And we don't have a lot of that in school nowadays. There's too much regulation. So we need to do something so that way we can preserve our own future, not only for present, but for the next generations to come. So we've got to look down their directions, not at what we're looking at today.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Farioli?
Mr. Chairman, I think the words of Will Rogers might be germane to this issue. Will Rogers said, from time to time, through some inherent weakness in the system, there ain't an institution of higher learning in the country that don't turn out a congressman or a senator.
Correct. Yes. So,
just a weakness in the system.
That's
there
right.
Is a
yes.
Living example, right?
Very good.
Hey. Thank you
for that
very
testimonial.
Much. All right, we're taking testimony on Senate Bill 369, and you're excused.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your coming here to testify. Please.
Senator Starr and members of the committee, excuse me, I'm Pat Evenson Brady. I'm currently the chairperson of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission and the superintendent of Region 9 Education Service District serving Wasco and Hood River counties. Again, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission has not taken a position with regard to 369. I would like to just provide some information for the committee. Currently, by rule, we are able to license all of the professional groups that are named in this bill and its companion bill. By rule, we could, all of the folks that have been mentioned in the previous testimony, I would suspect may well meet the requirements for restricted transitional licenses, limited licenses, and or professional technical licenses. So there are many alternative routes to certification in place currently. The second point is the one that I made earlier on Senate Bill 340, and that is if these individuals are not licensed by Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, they are not subject to the discipline that is imposed by the commission. If they violate good standards of teaching practice or administrator practice, which may not violate the standards for their own professional board, we have no ability to discipline them. And I don't believe that that advances the cause of strong education for the students of Oregon. And that's all I had to say.
Thank you. No questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've got Holly Cooper sitting back here waiting impatiently to come up and speak for her boss, Senator John Minnis.
Hi. Okay. For the record, I'm Holly Cooper. 369 puts a limit on how much Senate Bill 370 can be used. If school districts choose to use Senate Bill 370, they cannot employ more than 10%. But that's a little bit misleading because the bill in its current form states that it requires that 369 holds at least, you have to have at least 10% of school district's teaching staff to hold professional licenses other than teaching administrative licenses. But we're introducing it to be changed that to say that it's no more than 10%. So that's kind of going to be changed. And I will also be testifying on 370, so I'll be back, I'm sure.
We will close the hearing on 369 and open the hearing on 370 so that you can
start here.
Complete your testimony for us.
Okay. I'm going to get my little papers in order here. Okay. I'm speaking on this 370 on behalf of Senator Minnis, who regrets he cannot be here today. Senator Minnis introduced 370 as a starting place for this legislature to review how teachers are qualified or are certified in the state and how it might be possible to expand the pool of qualified individuals available to teach in the classrooms of public schools. This idea originated after his participation in a small group discussion with U.S. Secretary of Education Rodney Page after the discussion was about teacher shortages and how people are allowed to enter this profession. He is aware that Texas passed several pieces of legislation that speeds up the process for obtaining an alternative teaching certificate when a teacher transfers in from out of state and holds a teaching license from another state. Senate Bill 370 would allow a licensed professional, as defined by statute, such as a physician or an attorney, accountant, psychologist, or others, to teach in public schools. These professionals may be active in their practices, or they may be retired, but otherwise well-educated and qualified to teach in many subject areas with expertise and experience. The process for being allowed to teach in this capacity remain subject to the background investigation and fingerprinting currently required through the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. In addition, it would be expected that the authority to teach under this bill would remain a decision of the local school district through its normal hiring process. Senate Bill 370 would allow a person working or volunteering in such capacity to do so at a rate of pay which may be higher or lower than what would be allowed by the union contract, or to simply work at no pay at all. The parallel here is the use of the reserve policy officers that supplement the work of law enforcement agencies throughout this and many other states. Many of these persons are volunteers who just want to give back to their community after serving in another vocation or profession. I thank you for the opportunity to deliver my testimony. And if you have any questions, Senator Minnis would be delighted to answer them. Okay.
I will take advantage of that offer and talk to Senator.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Thanks, Holly. Appreciate it. All right. We've got a number of individuals. I'm going to have to get back to my list here.
I think we're in 370 now.
We're, let's see. We're taking testimony in Senate Bill 370, and we've got Teresa Ferrar. I messed that up.
Thank you, Senator.
Tricia Smith. And, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Senator Starr, Mr. Chair, and the committee, what's left of the committee in the room. My name is Teresa Ferrer. I work for the Center for Teaching and Learning at the Oregon Education Association, and I am very grateful to be here to express the opinions of the 45,000 members that we represent throughout the state. OEA urges, I'm going to speak specifically to 370, but my testimony really does also pertain to 369 as well. There are issues that that overlap both of the bills. We urge you to vote no on Senate Bills 369 and 370 on the following grounds and assumptions, and you have some exhibits that I have passed on that I hope that you will find some time to look at in detail later on. First of all, these proposed bills would place the state of Oregon and its public schools out of compliance with the federal No Child Left Behind Act, which mandates that all teachers teaching in the core subject areas be, and I quote, highly qualified. The assumption for us here is that Oregon does not intend to lose any federal Title I funds or further increase the likelihood that any of our public schools would be placed on a priority schools list. Secondly, these proposed bills are in direct contradiction to the evidence that links student learning to teacher certification in education. Again, the assumption here is that Oregon places high standards on learning and teaching and learning and its schools' ability to perform. Thirdly, these proposed bills ignore the evidence from other states of the high attrition rates of uncertified teachers. The assumption is that Oregon wants to retain its teachers at least long enough so that they can benefit the students that they are teaching, and that we do not want to emulate the state systems around the country that produce the lowest performing schools. And lastly, these proposed bills would mean that schools that employ a large number of uncertified teachers have a much wider achievement gap compared to schools with certified teachers only. And the assumption is that in Oregon, all students in every district have the same right to a quality education with qualified teachers. Now, Senate Bills 369 and 370 would set up provisions for Oregon public schools that are dependent upon federal funds and subject to high standards for student learning to employ teachers who are not only uncertified, but who are also not in alternative routes to licensure. And I'll briefly elaborate on these points to elaborate on what our objections are to that. First of all, the reauthorization of the SEA, or the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, or the No Child Left Behind Act, federal mandate requires that all states make schools accountable to student success. This mandate is directly tied to the state's allocation of federal funds, as I mentioned, and states that do not meet these requirements are in danger of losing those funds. Now, the annual yearly progress reports with sanctions to schools that do not meet the expected growth requirements is built into this law, along with a requirement that staff, certified teachers, and paraprofessionals that work directly with instruction be highly qualified. And this designation of highly qualified is explicitly outlined for the states, and I have submitted for you a flow chart of that definition. But I want to point out four basic components of that definition. One is that all teachers who teach in the following core subject areas, and that's English, reading, language arts, mathematics, science, foreign language, civics and government, economics, arts, history, and geography. And as you can tell, that's probably most of the subjects other than PE and health and vocational areas, must meet the highly qualified definition by 2005-2006, and all Title I teachers teaching those core subject areas must meet those requirements now. Also, newly hired teachers must meet full certification of the state. No waivers, no provisional emergency or temporary licenses. And thirdly, all teachers must have at least a bachelor's degree and meet the following requirements for their level. For elementary teachers, they must pass a content area test in elementary curricular areas or meet a statewide standard of evaluation that demonstrates content competency or have a national certification. Secondary teachers must pass a content area test in each subject area they teach, or have an academic major in that subject, or have a graduate degree in each subject they teach, or have national certification. And lastly, if you do not meet the highly qualified definition, you must be in an alternative route to licensure that will lead you to licensure within 3 years. While the districts will be mandated to provide intensive, sustained, and classroom-focused professional development and or mentoring. So careful study of that mandate clearly shows that a professional license issued from a public body to teach Oregon students does not even come close to meeting that federal mandate. And the question that we need to consider is, do we want to place Oregon public schools in danger of noncompliance? Secondly, the other issue that we brought up, there's the issue of high standards for students and the link between full certification, education of teachers, and student learning. There's been some work done by the analysis of the National Assessment of Educational Progress, or the NAEP scores, and it was found that there was the strongest indicator of student success in math and reading scores, even when taking into account poverty and language status, was full teacher certification with a major in the field of study in which they teach. Also, there are studies that content knowledge in combination with pedagogical knowledge, again, not just expertise in your content, but education and experience in delivering instruction and assessment of students and management of students, together with student teaching, contribute more to student learning than either component individually. National and state surveys in education show over and over that the American public overwhelmingly believes that, and I quote, teacher quality to be the single most important factor in improving public schools. So Oregon has been pursuing, under the 21st Century School Reform Act, vigorous standards for student learning in the state. And we have to deal with that every day. And well-trained and fully licensed teachers in Oregon know a great deal about those benchmarks. In fact, those teachers are very much involved in setting some of those standards and rubrics and work sample guidelines. And they know a lot about how to maximize learning. So do we want to jeopardize our ability to maintain those high standards for student learning in this state? Thirdly, there is an alarming evidence all around the country that teachers who enter the profession without full certification do not stay. Data from the 2000 Teach for America candidates, which is an alternative licensure route with a truncated teacher education requirement, showed that as many as 62% left teaching by the third year. A 2001 study showed that 29% of teachers who had not had student teaching left within 5 years, as compared to only 15% of those who had student teaching. And another study showed that 70% of teachers who had entered the field through short-term alternative routes left within 3 years, compared to only 15% who came from a fifth-year teacher education program. These statistics speak to teachers who are at the very least in poorly conceived alternative route programs. The proposed bills that you're considering would place adults who are not even pursuing licensure to be teaching our students throughout Oregon. The question is, do we want to subject Oregon students and schools to teachers who are at a risk of being unsuccessful? And lastly, we have only to look at our neighbor to the south, California, to catch a glimpse of the future that these bills suggest. With the lowest performing schools in the country, California has a record 40,000 plus teachers who are on emergency waivers and permits without any licensure, without any preparation. And most of those non-certified teachers teach in the schools with the highest proportion of low-income students and students of color. Nationally, it is also true that low-achieving schools are nearly five times more likely to have non-certified teachers than high-achieving schools. And that has been agreed by all of the folks who have studied low-performing schools to be the one factor that needs to be changed, the top priority that needs to be changed in those schools. These proposed bills would move Oregon backwards in its pursuit of narrowing the achievement gap that we are all very concerned about in this state. Requiring that public schools hire 10% of its FTE teachers outside of full licensure would raise alarms, believe me, throughout the state from parents, communities, and civil rights groups concerned with equal opportunity to the same staffing standards that has been proven successful in high-achieving schools. So that question is, are the citizens of Oregon prepared to go down the same road as California? So in conclusion, OEA hopes that these reasons are helpful to you in understanding the need and value of fully licensed teachers and administrators. The Oregon Education Association hopes that you look for other means of supporting sustained student success in Oregon schools and oppose these bills. Thank you.
Questions? Yes, Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon. Sorry I missed part of your testimony. You know, the one question that I've had on, and it's actually the prior bill or the one dealing with administrators, I don't like the requires in this, but I've always thought allows a small percentage, and you guys can tell me why I'm wrong on this, but allowing a principal or the school board on the administrator one, the ability in those unique circumstances where, say, I mean, I know of, like, the Marine Corporal or whatever that guided, I think it was Seattle, and seemed to do a pretty good job. Why wouldn't we just allow, and I don't like requires, but allow in those circumstances some exception.
Well, Senator Deckard, in the testimony in on Senate Bill 369 or 340, there was reference to the fact that there is an exceptional administrator license that allows for folks outside of education to be licensed in the state. They have to meet the basic qualification of a master's degree, and they have to be supported by a district that truly wants to hire them, that has a good idea of their qualifications and believes that they would do an excellent job. And
but
so,
sorry to interrupt you. Why should they have to have a master's degree? And if that school board really believes this individual can do the job?
Well, the testimony that preceded me talked about that master's degree being a threshold that assured that those folks had a minimum education requirement that could help them perhaps understand the kinds of and have skills and expertise in the kinds of management and curriculum and instructional decisions that have to be made as an administrator in public schools. Again, it's a threshold. There is no research that says a master's degree would do any of those things, but it is a threshold requirement. And in terms of teaching, we have alternative routes in the state of Oregon for licensure and for teaching outside of the field, but they are routes to licensure, which means that we believe teachers need to be fully prepared to do the job, fully prepared in what we understand are good practices around standards-based education for our state and for our public schools, and that also meet the qualifications that are handed down to us from the federal government. So there are alternative routes in licensure that come from different sides of the licensure administrative roles, but they do exist.
Mr. Chair,
Senator
I would really appreciate it if Mr. Bennett could address that issue, because we spent a lot of time on this earlier, and I think you need to hear the explanation that to the question that you asked.
And this is a question, I apologize because I was listening to something else.
I'm going to
ask me not to answer.
No. we've got a little bit of time left. What I'm going to do is go back and have reopen on Senate Bill 340 so that you can properly answer the question and address the 340.
Okay. Thank you. I apologize for not hearing the question.
Well, it was kind of a general. I mean, it could have applied actually to either bill. It is, instead of saying requires, but it's saying allows. And my thought was, whether it's the superintendent or the teacher example, why not allow when either the principal or that school board in a superintendent example thinks we have this supremely qualified individual. Maybe they don't have any formal education other than a high school diploma, but this person is just... So, to me, that makes some rational sense, but you guys can tell me why I'm...
Senator Deckard, if I may, I'd like to answer the question as it relates to teachers. If you are a teacher, if you are a person with a bachelor's degree, and that's the threshold for the teaching route, you have a district that believes you are highly qualified for that position, and they really want you for that position, there's a restricted transitional license that would allow you to teach in that district for 3 years in the assignment that they hire you for, but then you would be on a route to licensure, which means that you would then pick up while you are teaching the skills that you need that would be pertinent to your position. And we're hoping that these folks would want to be fully licensed and would want that expertise and that education and professional development.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Chuck Bennett representing the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And Mr. Chairman, this is on Senate Bill 340. The master's degree is a rule. It's in rule. It's certainly something that can be taken up again. But I would suggest to you, Senator, that the master's degree is a threshold and the singular threshold into becoming an administrator. Remember the role these folks are playing. They're playing a substantial pedagogical leadership role in a school with a whole bunch of other people who are coming who have joined an organization, who have become involved in a profession with a set of credentials. And I think you understand as well as I do that often credentials can play part of a leader's role. And I think what we're hoping is that with principals, superintendents, assistant superintendents having basic educational requirements at a master's level, they'll be able to exercise that kind of leadership authority relative to teachers that comes with being comparably educated. This is education. This is an educational endeavor. And I think that's probably a big part of it. Whether or not it provides them with the kind of, again, with the kind of skill sets that are absolutely demanded to be a principal, assistant principal, all of those other, that array of jobs available, I think is certainly something that can be discussed. But I think to, as a general rule, it offers that kind of respect, authority, and I'm trying to think of all the terms that go with it. You know, you know what I'm talking about, I think, that allows them to bring someone into the room, say, you know, sir, you have been, we would like to help you provide, or madam, to do a better job in teaching, and here's what I think I know and I've learned, and there's a kind of respect that goes back and forth, and that I think.
I guess the heart of my question is, and I appreciate that, because I think the arguments that both of y'all made are actually, I agree with largely, but why not leave the door open, not wide open, but just cracked, so that if there is that one or two persons out there that maybe didn't meet the standards that we all thought of, but boy, I mean, and I guess I think of that one Marine individual who seemed to do
Washington.
A good job in Seattle, that type of case. Shouldn't we?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Deckert, I don't know I don't know why they've made that decision. I don't know if they've ever been asked to readdress that decision, but I think it's an interesting question to pose to the TSPC. They clearly have the authority in rulemaking to take a look at this kind of issue, and I'm sure the chair of TSPC is listening carefully to your question, and it may well be one of those issues that they should take to rulemaking and have a discussion on. But those exceptions are really quite rare. And with the masters, we're seeing a pretty broad array of availability. So it's one of those, I think, that, you know, I think we can discuss, and I'll just stop.
I'm really sorry that you missed that earlier discussion, because I started with that question. That was my first question. And I think that we went into the various coursework that you would get to be an administrator, a superintendent, managing the various aspects of education, which you don't have to be a teacher to do that, and they have people with non-teaching standards. But I think that you need to talk with the TSPC.
Well, I'll do that.
Yeah,
I will do
because
that.
Because I started where you started.
Okay.
And I got some really good information.
We've had marvelous testimony.
Marvelous testimony.
I understand. I understand fully. We've got a busy schedule around this place. I regret the fact that we don't have Senator Perioli here to be hearing and participating also, but we're going to go proceed here. I think that the question you raise to me is vitally important, in that I believe that there are individuals with a high school education that would be really excellent teachers. Really excellent. In fact, some of them top presidents in our nation's history. In fact, a lot of our teachers early on were eighth grade graduates.
That's right.
And I see today that there's hundreds, perhaps thousands of teachers in private schools and homeschools that are doing above average job without the credentialing. So, yes, I'd like to see this at least allow the possibility that people might be recruited who have a degree in electrical engineering who would like to come back and teach math or science in the classroom. And these kinds of things should be open, and that's my opinion. Let's go on with our testimony, and we're going to have Chuck up next, so you just stay right there. Please.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Patricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, which is a union of public sector workers in K-12 community college and ESDs throughout the state, primarily classified employees, but most recently we've added several hundred certified employees, which is why I'm here speaking to you about these bills. The first thing I'd like to say about the bills is for OSEA, our certified teachers are currently working in ESDs. Neither Senate Bill 369 or 370 is particular or specific in its language in sections 1 of either bill about the definition of a school district. So we don't know, because this is added language to the statute and doesn't refer to an existing definition, we don't know whether or not these bills refer to and include teachers who are working for ESDs. With the assumption that they do, I will proceed with my testimony. And y'all can figure that part out later if these bills move. The first point I'd like to make about these bills is they seem to be moving Oregon in the opposite direction from the direction that the President and the Congress have moved the states through the No Child Left Behind Act, and as we will probably see in the reauthorization of the IDEA, the Special Education Act. The as you heard in previous testimony from Ms. Farrar, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act has increased the standards for teachers and classified employees that are working in instructional settings rather than decreasing those requirements in an effort to increase the quality of education for students, for all students in Oregon schools and in schools throughout the country. We see these bills as moving in exactly the opposite direction of the direction that the President has insisted and the Congress has agreed we should go. That's the first point. The second point that we have, and perhaps this will help in the discussion that you just had about why shouldn't we allow a school district if they know Fred Schwartz is just the greatest guy and he could be a really good teacher and I, the principal, or I, the superintendent, or even we, the school board, think that Fred would be a great teacher. The reason that we have TSPC, the reason that we have statewide standards, is because if you're wrong about Fred, Fred may very well be a great teacher and it might all work out. And that's why we have the ability to go through TSPC for these folks to get special licenses so they can teach in those districts, so districts can hire Fred. But if Fred turns out not to be the greatest teacher after all, indeed Fred turns out to be a person who harms children, if Fred leaves that district under the scenario of the district allowing, or why can't the district do it on their own, Fred can go to the next district, and they don't know anything about him. And there's no control or discipline of Fred if he misbehaves in his position. The importance of having a statewide standard for teachers and a statewide certification and licensure process for teachers is so that children all over the state can have the same quality of education as a minimum standard to begin. And then from there we build in the high quality that we hope that all children have. So we believe that it is important to have the controls in place that would allow school districts to rely on a minimal set of standards for anyone applying for a teaching position. If it is an electrical engineer that doesn't have a teacher's license, TSPC has a program that would allow that electrical engineer to go to work for a school district if the school district wants to hire that person. And we think that those are very important aspects of our laws and rules regarding licensure. Our teachers that OSEA represents are primarily special education teachers in ESDs. If Senate Bill 369 is enacted, and it does in fact include ESDs as school districts under the law, we would suggest to you that this could be a very disastrous situation, because special education teachers don't only need to know how to teach. They need to know how to teach a very vulnerable and special population. So they need more education, not less education. And we would suggest to you that if you do consider moving these bills forward, while we don't think that's a good idea, our certified teachers are in ESDs, and we would hope at the least you would look to those very specialized fields as fields in which you don't want Fred to apply because the district thinks he's a good guy.
questions?
Well,
Senator Marcet.
Oh, thank you. Teresa, is knowledge, subject matter knowledge, does that always translate into good teaching practices? I mean, if you're if you have a PhD in mathematics, does that mean you're going to be a mathematics teacher at the middle school level?
Senator Morissette, that's a wonderful question. And the
that's a home question, so please get it hard.
Well, the question is a wonderful question. It's been asked a lot all around the country. It is our belief that, no, content expertise is not the only ingredient in good teaching, that it's the combination of content knowledge and the ability to teach that makes a good teacher. Also, the dispositions that good teaching, caring, and competent education of a caring and competent educator are important as well.
Okay, thank you.
I think we can excuse you and
thank you,
Chuck. And I invite Bill Beck and Mardell to come up now.
Mr. Chairman, Chuck Bennett, representing the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. With your permission, I would just testify to both bills, if that would be...
I'm going to let you do that.
Thank
it's
you
a little
much.
Bit out of order to do that, but...
You're going to tap them in, tap out, or
I,
tap them both?
Yeah. Save the tapping. Mr. Chairman, we would like to associate COSA with the comments of my colleagues that testified previously, and then just speak to a couple of additional issues. Mr. Chairman, there are additional license opportunities that have been alluded to. I just want to mention them to you. There is the restricted transitional license, Bachelor of Arts only. You have 3 years to teach, particularly if the district really wants you. So you can get in the door with the Bachelor of Arts only. Professional technical education license, no Bachelor of Arts required, just 2 years of industrial experience, of industry experience in the area that you're going to be teaching. There are emergency licenses, exceptional licenses. There's a limited teaching license with an associate degree or equivalent that's good for 3 years and renewable. There is a lot of opportunity to fulfill, I think, what the spirit of this law is. And we would like to, I think, as this bill, if this bill is going to move forward, even if it doesn't, I'd like to provide you over the next few days information on the number of teachers who are working in these various license categories, maybe explore a little more carefully what the additional categories are so you can see what's out there. We are, again, very concerned about a number of issues kind of inside the bill that relate to the question of discipline relative to this group. These folks coming that would be under these bills coming in with professional licenses outside of teaching licenses. Should we have problems, we need to make sure that we go into those licensing statutes and guarantee us some way to discipline them. That is comparable to the kind of disciplinary relationship we have with licensees under TSPC. So if you have a chiropractor teaching science, that we have access to their chiropractic license through their licensing board to deal with them as they if they acted inappropriately inside of the teaching environment. I would suggest to you we're going to be looking at a substantially larger bill as we start to look at that, but I don't see how you can take on a person with a professional license and bring them into a school environment with some sort of controls. We need to make sure as well that we also have the kind of fingerprinting and background checks that are currently done by TSPC. This is a major service and certainly one that over the years has become for this legislature a major issue, was making sure that the folks coming into the schools have been carefully screened, that appropriate folks are working with children, particularly if you're going to step outside of the TSPC environment. We have just got to figure out how to take care of that issue. I was pleased to hear Holly mention that Senator Minnis had spotted the problem with requiring that 10% of a school district teaching staff hold professional licenses outside of teaching. We were trying to figure out how those small and remote schools were going to deal with that shortfall of other professionals in the community available to them to plug into that 10% teaching license, and would hope that that could be resolved. We'd like to see that fixed. And then I guess the question becomes, with those professional licenses, what are they going to teach exactly? I mean, are you going to have lawyers teaching the Constitution, business law? Are you going to have them teaching ethics, morality? What is that lawyer with their professional license and their perception of what that professional license has entitled them to teach? What will they be teaching? What will each of them? I think that's kind of getting a feel for what is the scope of their expertise that would be targeted on to the children of this state. And I'd submit to you that that can get pretty hazy. And I think I'm trying to point out, I think, some problems with this whole concept, particularly as it steps outside of the TSPC environment. We continue to just be committed to the idea that this is a very good way. Now, that doesn't mean it's perfect and that it can't be adjusted, but a very good way to bring in highly qualified, carefully selected, hopefully well-screened people into a profession that employs tens of thousands of individuals dealing with several hundred thousand children in the state of Oregon, and that we've really got a pretty good system at work. Not perfect, but a pretty good system, and we hope you would tinker with it, not make major changes, and this represents major changes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, please.
Again, Chair Starr and members of the committee, I'm Bill Beck with COSA. I just want to share an example of the kind of issues that you've been raising, and it happened in Powers School District over on the coast recently. And last year, the Superintendents Association honored an individual who was retired from the Forest Department as an engineer, and who was teaching an online class in calculus to the students in Powers. They couldn't afford to have a calculus teacher, and they had no one on staff that was capable of doing that. So they worked an arrangement with this individual to do an online program. And I'm not sure which other district since then has joined in on that same opportunity, but that's the kind of program that, and the kind of individual I heard you speaking to earlier, and it's happening. It's happening under current rule. And I think, as my colleague just finished saying, this represents major change. And if the system is working, let's make sure everybody understands how the system operates, and then this law shouldn't be needed.
Let me direct the question,
yes,
to you, and any of the three of you, feel free to respond to it. Several references to highly qualified. And I think the proof of qualification really will be the student accomplished. But if a person has the ability to teach calculus because of his life experience, his training, and produces students who are good students of calculus, then I think that meets the qualification of highly qualified to me. And what other qualifications is he going to have,
Mr. Chairman,
in order to maintain a license?
Sorry. Mr. Chairman, I would defer to Teresa's comments from OEA. I thought she spoke to it, and I know is very familiar with No Child Left Behind, and that highly qualified is really becoming is a federal standard that we're going to have to meet. And I would think that she could probably speak better than any of us to, or I would speak for myself anyway, better than I could to what that federal requirement is. I think she knows that up one side and down the other.
I would concur. Teresa did summarize that bill very well. She's been working with it very closely.
Thank you. I want to
talk more with Teresa about that.
There's a chair here.
Come on up, please.
Not right now. Oh. We've got a few minutes. Please, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I'm Ardale Dunsworth with the Oregon Department of Education. Again, I will just add a couple additional points. We are concerned that the bill allows a teacher at any grade level to be hired by a school district if they hold any type of professional license, and that would be in conflict with the No Child Left Behind high-quality teacher criteria. In addition, this bill does repeal ORS 342-173, which does eliminate all sanctions for employing an unlicensed teacher or administrator, so we're very concerned about that as well. And we believe there's going to be an increased responsibility to receive and evaluate licensure from other states and other entities, so I think that will impact school districts across the state. We are unclear whether or not this bill also includes national teacher certification. So that wasn't necessarily mentioned, but we're concerned whether that would qualify. And finally, it also removes the data from the school and district report cards, which parents are very interested in knowing about the number of classes taught by a teacher outside of their certification area. So that is a piece of information that parents have asked for, and this would eliminate.
Could I just ask a real quick question? My children attended parochial schools for a while, and I am very close to St. Paul's Catholic School in Eugene. What's the difference in their standards and the state of Oregon standards for teaching? Now, that they have some excellent teachers. Why do the public school system have rules and the Catholic school system don't? Now, that is a very simple question, and I hope you can give me a very simple answer.
You want to take a shot at
that? Oh! That's a very simple answer.
Okay, would you agree that the difference is that in a private parochial school, the parents pay the entire cost of education, and in the public system, it's the taxpayers who pay the cost of education? Could that be a reason why there are different standards?
I don't know if that's a reason why I would agree with your statement, oh. Senator Morissette.
Okay.
However, you know, private schools don't require licensure, and public schools do.
Yeah. Okay.
Any further questions? I believe we've heard from all of our witnesses. I have not decided if we're going to try to move these bills, but I'm going to try to work them. I'd like to have some people come talk to me. I'm going to talk to committee members. I think if we move them, they're going to be much more limited than they appear right now. But I have a sense that there might be some possibilities here where we could perhaps make opportunity for exceptional teachers to be employed by local districts who are not meeting TSPC or other standards. So I'm I'm willing to be persuaded. I think we've had some really good, compelling testimony today. But we wound up on a note that convinces me that there are good educators out there that are not being certified by the SBC. And
could I make a statement? I agree that there are some excellent educators. People who have very high academic standards are accomplishments who can make great contributions in the classroom, and I think that it's important that we allow that to happen whenever possible, and I am convinced that we have the mechanism for that to happen today. I think that it's good to talk about these things and to revisit them, and I appreciate the information about the new federal standards, because that's something that we do have to consider, that No Child Left Behind, and we are getting some federal dollars to do some things, and so we have to take that into account. So I appreciate that.
Yes.
Senator Morissette, I'd be happy to consult with you about the particulars about the law, as well as ODE and TSPC.
appreciate that very much, because that's going to be one of my major concerns this legislative session, that the state be fully in compliance with No Child Left Behind. Yeah.
Senator Starr, I will assure that TSPC gets you a list of the existing alternative routes to certification, as we have discussed several times for both administrators and teachers that already exist.
Thank you kindly. Appreciate all the good testimony. You've done a great job.
Thank you.
With that, we're going to adjourn the Senate Education Committee.
So what are we going to do with the 10 minutes we have left?